Welcome to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You know what I'm saying? I think you do.
Here's Cole Thompson.
And here we go. Welcome into Just Saying It right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Cole Thompson back in the driver's seat, getting you caught up on everything you might have missed. Headed into a happy, happy hump day. 800-224-2004. Call on the show. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you hate. Let's be real. You love everything about this show. We know you love everything about this show. And we want to hear from you, the listener. So make sure you tune in. 800-224-2004. At Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter. At Sports Map Radio. Download the Just Saying It podcast version of the show on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, Audio Boom. Wherever else you get your podcast listening systems, we got you covered 24-7, 365 days out of the year. And do me one more favor. Make sure you download the Sports Map Radio app. Carries in your pocket throughout your day so you don't miss a second of all of our great local programming. The wonderful, delightful Michael Hernandez on the other side of the glass producing fun hour planned ahead. Why are we not talking more about Georgia football going into the 2023 season? They are the two-time defending national champions. Shouldn't they be at the forefront of every conversation when talking about the world of college athletics? Let's also talk about a team like Ohio State. Another organization that last year very well could have been in the running for its own national title. And instead, we're focusing in on the negatives and the absolute downtrodden deterioration of Ryan Day's play calling, rather than we are about the positives about where this team ranks among contenders going into 2023. Deshaun Watson comes out with a certain statement about potentially adding in a former all-pro wide receiver. Could it make sense for the Browns to bring in DeAndre Hopkins? And let's also talk a little bit about what's going on in the NFL with other certain aspects. But we start off today with a conversation about what could occur with the team like the Las Vegas Raiders. 800-224-2004. So the thing that people really want to focus in on right now, and arguably be, I think, in my opinion, the one, what's the right word? Question moving forward is, what do you do now that the Jimmy Garoppolo thing is going on? So those of you that aren't paying attention, Jimmy Garoppolo signed a 3-year deal in the offseason worth $67.5 million. He's supposed to be the upgraded option over Derek Carr because if he has a great relationship with Josh McDaniels, and McDaniels, Patriot way, Patriot culture, Patriot West, whatever the hell you want to say it is going to now lead your team to victory in the near future. And it's going to be a reason why you're a contender in the AFC West. Well, now there is a waiver clause that was added, an amendment that says if because of his foot injury, he is unable to play this year, that he won't have all that guaranteed money coming into his pocket. And that's a big deal, you know, naturally, because of you look at the roster as a whole. Where are, in my opinion, the avenues for you to go win at quarterback? And I heard this rumor, and in my opinion, it's a little bit of an asinine rumor. But let's just talk about it. Could Tom Brady be the starting quarterback in Las Vegas? So Tom Brady buys a little bit of the stake in the likes of the Raiders organization. He's now a part-time owner. Mark Davis still runs the show. He now looks like Lex Luthor instead of having that bowl cut that made him look like a dork. But he is now still the primary guy. But Tom Brady, as a minority owner, had people speculating. What could it take to get into play? The thing is that we've never seen this happen in major professional sports since the merger of the 1960s. And this is really an asynchronous sport, but we'll just focus in on football for that matter. Because back in the 50s, back in the 40s, you know, back in the early days of baseball, you would see managers also be players. You would see owners have a say if they were on the roster. Some would be the coaches. My dad loves telling me the story about Napla Joe. For those of you that are very old or not even old enough, you may not remember this. Napla Joe was the former owner of Cleveland. He actually named the Cleveland Guardians, which is now, you know, which was another name before that, the Cleveland Naps after himself. And he was the manager. He was the owner. I think he was a pitcher for the team. So he did a little bit of everything for that. The thing is that I don't know where we're getting on the spectrum of that Tom Brady would be able to play for a team like Las Vegas. Because here's the big thing. Is the NFL going to approve an owner to also be a coach or a player or a starting quarterback? And is a seven-time Super Bowl champion the greatest quarterback to ever grace a football field, who we know has certainly had these kind of conversations in the offseason? Will I retire? Won't I retire? Do I want to go ahead and give my body to the game? Am I all invested on getting up in this next chapter of my life? Is that something worth bringing up? And you're like, what do you go from here? For starters, the NFL would have to approve it. He would have to be okay. 32 owners would have to agree that Tom Brady, as a minority stakes owner, would be eligible to play for a roster. They may have to swing the vote in favor of him. They also could say, no, we don't want you to. So Tom would have a discussion on his hands. He could either go ahead and pull out his shares and his stakes in the Raiders to sign a one-year contract and go play for Las Vegas, and then an offseason later maybe go ahead and buy the team again and get back those stakes. But money could go up, and easily money could go up, and the asking price could go up. And if he does end up failing, it could be a really sour start to his tenure as any bit involved with the Las Vegas Raiders, because a lot of people are always going to remember that first moment of when you step into the sun. Everyone always remembers a first impression. Sometimes first impressions are good, sometimes they're terrible. He has a bad showing in his first overall performance as a Raider, whether that be a quarterback, whether that be an owner. People are going to remember that. I mean, everyone remembers that kind of stuff. Number two, the league would not only have to approve it, he would also have an egregious amount of expectations to lead his team to victory. Why? Because even though he's going to be 47 years old this year, he's Tom bleeping Brady. Brady's been able to win everywhere. Brady had an entire offseason during COVID-19, a pandemic where the world shut down, and he found a way to lead a Tampa Bay Buccaneers roster not just to a Super Bowl in its own backyard, but to a Super Bowl title. Didn't have a whole offseason to work. So now you're saying, well, we now believe that our roster was good enough because of Josh McDaniels brought over Jimmy Garoppolo, and that offense is already predicated to him, that he's going to come in right away and be an upgrade over Derek Carr. You have to do the same thing. Why? Because you spent a decade working with this man. The reason why you were able to go ahead and win Super Bowls in the 2010s was because of your relationship. And so that's a thing that you're going to have to wonder. The other thing, and the biggest thing, Tom also has to agree that he wants to play. Has anybody even asked Brady what he wants? If he thinks that he is good enough to be able to play anymore? Because you got to remember, one of the souring things about Brady last year was that his numbers weren't as productive as the years prior. Still were good. Still were easily enough to say, yeah, we're good enough to make the postseason. But part of the reason for the downtrodden success against Dallas in the wild card game when they hosted a playoff game was Brady threw interceptions. He did not look like the TB12 of yesteryear. And so that is a major factor. And the last thing that you want to do, primarily if you are a great quarterback, is end your career on a very lackluster, souring note. Remember Brett Favre? Remember when Brett Favre took Minnesota to the NFC Championship game? Two years after he left Green Bay, he was already coming off of a really underwhelming performance, especially late in the year against the New York Jets. And that wasn't all his fault. He got injured, and that was part of the reason why the Jets didn't make the playoffs. But still, that was the legacy of what we remember of Brett Favre. That his legacy changes because of at least he's a game away from going back to the Super Bowl with a rival opponent of the team that he called home for almost his entire career. And the year after that, well, Minnesota was one of the worst teams in the NFL, and that was what the lasting image of Brett Favre was. Joe Montana, kind of same thing. Warren Moon, kind of same thing. Quarterbacks everywhere end up going to another roster because they're like, oh, I want to continue to play. I want to be able to go ahead and earn a little bit more money. I think that my legacy is secured. But most of the time, that impact isn't like a Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning did things the right way. Won an MVP the second that he arrived in Denver. Then had 2 years where he was good but not incredible, then allowed his team to get better and be built for his lackluster limitations, and then he ended off going off in the sunset with an NFL title, and he realized at that point, I can't play anymore. So why come back and try and keep this domination and build a dynasty after beating Carolina in the Super Bowl when I wasn't the reason for our team's success. In fact, the defense was the reason we even had a shot of having a Super Bowl title, let alone making it to the postseason. I didn't play for 7 games at the end of the year, and Brock Osweiler gets paid $72 million by the Texans because if he somehow puts on a nice little song and dance pony trick that makes people believe he can be a franchise-caliber quarterback. Manning did it right. And right now, Brady has one way that people can remember him. It could easily be, I ended my time in Tampa Bay as the reason for our team's success. I saw an opportunity in a lackluster, woeful division, an open arms race to be able to host a playoff game, and I still had a rapport with receivers like Chris Godwin, with Mike Evans, potentially a great tight end, whichever it was. Maybe Robert Gronkowski was going to come back, but he ended up not. The offensive line wasn't terrible, still solid defensive play. Most of the offense is going to change because Byron Leftwich is still calling the shots. I feel good about at least returning. And nobody out there is going to blame Tom Brady because if he's Tom Brady for not being able to get his team over the hump. That's just the way it is. Tom Brady was not the reason for the faults and the downtrodden deterioration of a team like Tampa. He wasn't the reason for the success either, but he wasn't the reason for the problems. He's now doing things the right way. What happens if he goes into a roster that I've already said I think is definitely at the bottom cellar of the AFC West, and there's still a 7-9 roster, or there, I mean a 7-10 roster, or an 8-9 roster? Unlike 8-9 in the NFC South, where you have Atlanta, Carolina with quarterback questions, New Orleans with quarterback questions, you have Patrick Mahomes in your conference and in your division. You have Justin Herbert in your conference and in your division. Not to mention a plethora of young quarterbacks and Aaron Rodgers now trying to run the show and hoist up a playoff title. Yeah, I could see a scenario where people are saying, oh, Tom Brady to Las Vegas makes sense. Does it really, though?
You're listening to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
Pause to your boy Hopkins.
Well, me and D-Hop, we just naturally talk. We've been talking since, you know, the Houston days, and then also whenever he left for Arizona, we were always talking. So, you know, he's always been a brother of mine since I was coming out of high school. Our connection, our relationship has always been great. And I know there's a lot of things swirling around in the media of, you know, him possibly coming to Cleveland. And, you know, for me, my answer to that is, of course, we would love to have him. He knows that. We had a lot of connections, but, you know, that's kind of out of my range of things of kind of coordinating things. So all I can do is, you know, make a call and see what happens, let AB do the rest.
Yeah, as you know, Jeff, I really, really like our wide receiver room. I love the guys that are in there. Andrew and his crew are always looking at every avenue and that type of thing. So I won't comment specifically on the player other than to say I really like our roster.
You may like your roster, Kevin Stefanski, but you definitely could use a number one receiver like DeAndre Hopkins. 800-224-2004 at Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter, at SportsMap Radio. Deshaun Watson and Kevin Stefanski discussing what potentially could occur if DeAndre Hopkins wants to play for an organization like the Browns. There are some things that are very evident in the history of anything in life. When you have a great relationship with somebody, you enjoy working with them. I once had a co-host in college. Loved the kid to death. His name is Andy Bass. Andy was excellent at running a show, and he let me just run my mouth and be able to do whatever I wanted, have conversations, be able to break down whatever I thought was funny on air. And because of it, we had a number one radio show in college. I still talk to Andy every once in a while, and I miss him all the time. He's a great dude. I would not be where I am without Andy Bass. So, Andy, if you are listening to the show, thank you, brother. I know that we are out in Birmingham, so maybe you're up with your daughter right now and it means something. But that relationship would mean, hey, if Andy ever wanted to get back into radio, which he elected not to do when he graduated from the University of Alabama, I'd love to work with him again, mainly because of I knew how to play off of him. I knew how to work with him. Buddy of mine that's in my wedding, Marquise. Marquise no longer works in sports, still works in radio, but he's on the music side. Did a radio show with him for a little bit, did a podcast with him. We were really good. I know how to play off him. He knows how to push my buttons. I know how to do all those little things and tricks that would make compelling conversations. Jake Asman, he works on the local side here, is a good friend of mine. I've worked with him multiple times. There's a lot of positives when we work together. I would love to work with him. That chemistry is something that you have. And the one thing that you could say about DeAndre Hopkins is he's never had a great quarterback outside of Deshaun Watson. DeAndre Hopkins can go ahead and sell people that he wants to play for not just Super Bowl title contention, but also with a plethora of other great up-and-coming names. But how many times have we seen that up-and-coming name, unfortunately, not live up to expectations? Cleveland has seen it far too many times. Baker Mayfield comes in the building. Baker Mayfield has an incredible first year, sets the rookie record in passing touchdowns, actually gives hope and stability to a franchise that has more quarterbacks in a graveyard than most graves that we would see in the 1980s. Like, that's what we have right now, is that this type of absolute dumpster fire downtrodden franchise. So they go ahead and they trade for a guy in Odell Beckham Jr. to take this team to new heights. OBJ never becomes exactly what we want him to be. And so the expectation and the nuances and the criteria that we thought was all going to work with these two never panned out. But a relationship with an Eli Manning, OBJ was at his best. And Eli Manning, who has always been a subject of conversation for that matter, definitely would love to have an OBJ back on his team. And maybe he would have had a little bit of a longer career because of it. And maybe New York would have been to a few more postseason runs because of it. That chemistry was a big deal. Deshaun Watson has never had a receiver that he's worked extremely well with outside DeAndre Hopkins. Yeah, he had a good year with Brandon Cooks, but we don't know if they would have been able to build that rapport, because the next season, he decided to sit out the entire year and not talk to people inside the building with Houston. Meanwhile, Brandon Cooks went on to have a 1,000-yard season. So DeAndre Hopkins can tell everyone he wants to go play with Josh Allen. But what if him and Josh Allen aren't on the same page? Well, that not only hurts a team like Buffalo, but it also hurts the production of a guy like DeAndre Hopkins. What if he loves the idea of playing with Lamar Jackson, but with so many mouths to feed, with Zay Flowers, with Mark Andrews, with OBJ, with Rashad Bateman, he's relegated to being the number three receiver. And you're DeAndre Hopkins. You don't want to be the number three receiver. You want to be, at worst, the number two receiver. There's chemistry. There's continuity. There's consistency. Three big C's, and they're missing one C in the relationship between these two players. Championship. They could have one in Cleveland because of it. I went on a huge rant yesterday, and I had people actually call me from Dallas on my way home saying that was a really smart option. I mean, that was a really smart analogy that you used. Talking about the Cowboys, adding in a guy like DeAndre Hopkins. You're not going to feel better about yourself passing on DeAndre because you have Michael Gallup on the roster and he's had a 1,000-yard season. You feel better about having a guy like DeAndre on your roster and then knowing you have a Michael Gallup still at your disposal, waiting in the wings to deliver a big-time game every once in a while, because not every player is going to be able to go off for 17 straight appearances in an NFL season. You feel better about your team adding in a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, and you think that DeAndre Hopkins will elevate your status as being a legitimate contender. And I'm talking about a team in Dallas that already is probably in the running for, at worst, the number three seed in the NFC, and at best, the number one seed in the NFC. And this is pre-DeAndre Hopkins. What do you think I'm going to say about this when it comes to Cleveland? It does make sense. They have Donovan Peoples-Jones, who is a good quality secondary option in the passing game. I'd be fine with relegating him to a number four role if it meant adding in the DeAndre Hopkins. You have Elijah Moore. Add him this offseason. You have high expectations that he could pan out right away. You also know that he was a very much underwhelming player last season with the New York Jets. Now, part of that was because they didn't have great quarterback play, but Garrett Wilson caught four touchdown passes from four different quarterbacks and had 1,000 yards. So you can't entirely negate that on him. And you have Amari Cooper, but it feels like every once in a while, Amari Cooper fails to be able to be respected in the NFL. Excellent route runner, great after the catch, smooth, silky hands. Yet somehow, we kind of put him on the back burner of conversations. Well, he's still there. Do you think that right now, if you added in the DeAndre Hopkins with Elijah Moore, with Donovan Peoples-Jones, with Amari Cooper, with a run game that features Nick Chubb, with a tight end like David Njoku, another one like Jordan Akins, who already has a great relationship with Deshaun Watson, you're not at the forefront? I have been very adamant throughout the entire offseason. I love what Cleveland did. I think Cleveland had one of the more under-the-radar, suave seasons of success to where I truly do believe that they could easily be an 11-win roster. They could win the AFC North. That's how sneaky good of an offseason they had. And I love the additions of what they brought in at wide receiver. I think Cedric Tillman out of Tennessee was one of the best receivers in this year's draft class. And I think he will have a luxurious career if he gets started off on the right note. But you're trying to win now. Your window of opportunity to successfully say the Deshaun Watson trade was worth every bit of it comes this year. And it goes into next year. But this year, where you can not only set the tone, but also where you can really show the NFL you knew what you were doing if you were the Haslam family, giving out a fully guaranteed $230 million contract to a quarterback that had more offseason concerns than he did touchdowns in 2021. Yeah, you think that right now that'd probably be a smart move for you to do. Good teams adding good players. And if you have the salary cap to do so, which Cleveland would have to move some money around naturally, you go ahead and make that deal. But look at where Cleveland is. They play in a rigorous AFC North division. I've been on record. Yesterday, you heard me. This is the toughest division in the NFL, hands down. Pittsburgh, they are the definition of consistency. You now have great weaponry and I think an upgraded offensive coordinator to work alongside Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. And has anybody else forgotten that the last 2 years, Cincinnati went to the AFC Championship game with Joe Burrow on a rookie contract? They only got better this offseason by adding in more players, and that defense, I think, is still going to be one of the better units, especially in the second half of games. You can't afford to not have great play. Now, the big thing is DeAndre Hopkins, number one, has to agree that he wants to play for Cleveland, he wants to play with Deshaun Watson, and he wants to play for an organization that does not meet the criteria of what was on his list of things that he wanted to go to this offseason, if he was released or traded. Great quarterback play. Yeah, Deshaun Watson, when he's on his P's and Q's, is probably a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. You have a good offensive system. I think Kevin Stefanski is very much getting shafted in the mainstream of lights. And I do think that you have a great defense. The additions of Obo Okoronkwo, Za'Darius Smith, Juan Thornhill, there's a lot to like about where this team is trending upward. But it's that culture and chemistry of the team as a general. Cleveland's a cesspool. Can we all agree? Like, the Browns are a cesspool organization, but chemistry plays a major factor. If you think right now your best chance of winning a ring, being known in infamy, is in Cleveland, and you think as Cleveland that you can get the best play out of DeAndre Hopkins, you go ahead and make that call 10 times out of 10.
This is Just Saying It on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
It's a happy hump day special. Would you rather? A very simple game we play here on Just Saying It, 800-224-2004. The concept is very straightforward. Would you rather this or would you rather that? Now, yesterday, I did my top 10 offensive breakout players in 2023. Guys I think are going to make headlines next year. Players I think that are going to transcend their talents. Well, why don't we go ahead and put them through the ringer? Not offensive players, but just players in general that I think are absolutely going to be on the cuspidence and the precedence of having stellar either sophomore campaigns, junior campaigns, fourth-year seasons. There's a lot to like about a lot of these teams. But if I had to go ahead and put a gun to my head right now and decide, hey, this player is going to end up with better stats and better numbers this year than that guy, I'm going to go ahead and bet on it right now. So would you rather breakout players in 2023? Michael, start the music.
Pittsburgh Steelers QB Kenny Pickett or Chicago Bears QB Justin Fields?
I think both have a lot to prove this year. I think Kenny Pickett, as a 26-year-old second-year player, definitely is going to have a little less of a, what's the right word, time to be able to develop, because of what you see is what you get at a certain age. Like, who you are as a player is who you're going to be. And I do think that right now Pittsburgh did enough this offseason to put themselves in a conversation of maybe not last place in the AFC North, but I don't think they are in contention status just yet. There are good receivers. There's a great tight end in Pat Freiermuth. There's also a good run game. I think that adding in a couple of players on the offensive line, Isaac Simello, Broderick Jones, the kid out of Georgia, is definitely going to benefit them. But I look at Chicago. Chicago is in a must-win year with Justin Fields, not in terms of wins and losses, but productivity, because of you are going to have two first-round picks in next year's draft. If you're picking in the top five and have an opportunity to get a Caleb Williams or a Drake May, and part of the reason why you can't get over the hump is because Luke Getsy's offense isn't correlating with Justin Fields. Now that you add in DJ Moore, now that Darnell Mooney is relegated back to that number two role, now that you have, I think, a decent run game with guys like Roschon Johnson out of Texas and Deontay Foreman, a better offensive line because you added in Nate Davis from Tennessee. You also added in Darnell Wright, the kid from Tennessee, in the first round. I do feel like Justin Fields feels a little bit more pressure. I think that he lives up to the expectation. He also plays in a much weaker division where there's questions when it comes to Minnesota's defense. There's questions when it comes to Detroit's defense. There's questions when it comes to Green Bay's defense. So add that all up. Weaponry is better. Offensive line is stable. And I do think a full year in the play calling where you won't have to utilize your legs as much and you can be a more dynamic passer, Justin Fields is going to live up to expectations. I pick Justin Fields.
Houston Texans running back Damian Pierce or Jacksonville Jaguars running back Travis Etienne?
I'm going to go with Damian Pierce, and the main reason why is because of that physical run-and-gun style of offense that they're going to call in Houston, I think gives him more of an opportunity to play. Look at the running backs behind Damian Pierce. Devin Singletary, former number one with Buffalo, better relegated to that number two role. A lot of guys that I don't even know if are going to make the roster. Dare Obanagwe, Mike Boone. Are these guys that are really saying, hey, they're going to be impactful players in Houston? And last season, Damian Pierce, in his first full year as the lead tailback ever in his career, that means 4 years at Florida, he's finally going to get a chance to get 1,000 yards and break that streak. In Jacksonville, Travis Etienne's going to be a weapon. He's going to be good on third down. He's going to be a guy that you're going to try and target in the passing game a little bit more. I do think he is going to have another breakout season because if he was great last year, fully healthy, but they did add in Jamaica Hasty. They did add in, Dearness Johnson, the kid from Cleveland, and they drafted Tank Bigsby, the burly running back out of Auburn. So they're going to be a running back by committee where the numbers and the production may end up hurting and deteriorating his overall style of play, where in Houston, you're going to have probably about 25 carries per game or 22 carries per game for Damian Pierce. And Pierce is going to be a guy that probably gets 4.5 yards per play, 4.6 yards per play. And with a better offensive line, his numbers are going to be much more productive. Not to mention there's a plethora of weaponry in Jacksonville. You don't even know who's the number one receiver right now in Houston. Damian Pierce probably clears Travis Etienne, but Travis Etienne does not have a bad year. Make that very clear. It's just Damian Pierce has a better one.
New Orleans Saints wide receiver Chris Olave or New York Jets wide receiver Garrett Wilson?
The battle of Ohio State receivers. I'm going to go Chris Olave for two main reasons. Number one, Aaron Rodgers is in the building in New York, and he brought over Alan Lazard. Alan Lazard is going to get a lot of targets because there's already that relationship and the rapport of them working together in Green Bay. As long as he stays healthy, he's going to see a lot of targets. Doesn't mean he's going to finish as the number one wide receiver in the NFL. Doesn't even mean he's going to finish as the number one wide receiver on a roster like New York. But you have questions when it comes to who is your number one receiver in New Orleans. You don't know what Derek Carr is looking for in the passing game. And Chris Olave last year was phenomenal playing with Taysom Hill, playing with Andy Dalton, playing with Jameis Winston, had over 1,000 yards, didn't have a lot of touchdowns, but you can go ahead and say touchdowns are kind of like an easy outlier stack because no one knows if you're going to find the end zone for 6 points. He's a great route runner. He's got great speed after the catch. I think in New Orleans, there's more of an opportunity for him to be successful. Where in New York, you're going to be fighting for reps with Mecole Hardman, with the run game, with Alan Lazard, with other players to where if Aaron Rodgers does not have a great relationship with you from the jump, well, unfortunately, you're probably going to be relegated to that number two role. Doesn't mean you're going to have a bound down year. Just means that Chris Olave, because of Derek Carr, is looking for that new number one. His Devontae Adams, his Hunter Renfrow, his former Michael Crabtree. He's looking for that in the Bayou. And I think that right now, Chris Olave gives you that better chance.
Detroit Lions wide receiver Jameson Williams or Washington Commanders wide receiver Jahan Dotson?
I think Jameson Williams has the opportunity to be a difference maker for Detroit, but he's going to miss six games, plain and simple. You got to go with Jahan Dotson. Dotson last year was a phenomenal route runner. He did a great job playing that number two role opposite of Terry McLaurin. And I don't really know what's going to happen in the passing game right now for a team like Washington, because you still have Terry McLaurin, you still have Curtis Samuel, and you still have great tight end play potentially with Logan Thomas. Okay, great tight end play is not really the right word. Adequate tight end play in Logan Thomas. But let's go ahead and be real for that one. With Jameson Williams, he's going to have to play catch up the entire season. He comes back in week 7. He could easily now be relegated to the number 3 or number 4 role because Sam LaPorta has a really good year. Amon-Ra St. Brown has a really good year. You have a guy like Josh Reynolds really step up. Marvin Jones is back in the building for that matter. So I think that Jahan Dotson and his route running ability will give Sam Howell a bit of a more open opportunity to be really successful. And he was phenomenal last season. He almost finished with 1,000 yards. Why can't he get 1,000 yards this year? And why can't him and Terry McLaurin be one of the more slept-on wide receiver tandems in the NFL?
Atlanta Falcons tight end Kyle Pitts or Pittsburgh Steelers tight end Pat Freiermuth?
I'm going to take Freiermuth, and the only reason why is I can't trust Desmond Ridder, and I can't trust Kyle Pitts in this offense. Again, they added in Jonnu Smith. Jonnu Smith is a tight end that really worked well in the passing offense underneath Arthur Smith when they were playing together in Tennessee, or when he was the offense coordinator in Tennessee and Jonnu Smith was the number one tight end. I think that him going to Atlanta actually boosts his numbers. And I have no idea what Desmond Ridder is going to be. I know what Kenny Pickett is. He's a guy that's going to worry a lot about completion percentage. He's a guy that's going to have some turnovers. And yeah, there's a plethora of weapons with Deontay Johnson, with potentially Calvin Austin, with George Pickens hopefully having a breakout year. There's a lot to like in Pittsburgh when it comes to the passing game, just like there is a lot to like when it comes to Atlanta in the passing game. I'm just going based off quarterback. I would take Kenny Pickett over Desmond Ridder right now. That's the only reason why I can't trust Kyle Pitts. And yeah, Kyle Pitts had 1,000 yards his rookie year. Cool story, bro. What'd you do in year 2? You didn't find the end zone, and you didn't really nothing. You have one touchdown in a year.
Detroit Lions, Aiden Hutchinson, or New York Giants edge, Kayvon Thibodeau?
I'm going to go with Aiden Hutchinson. I feel like a full year in this defense underneath Aaron Glenn's really going to benefit him. Last season, you saw the upside of what a guy like Aiden Hutchinson can do. Thibodeau's a great player, and I think Thibodeau's going to be a name that you definitely want on your roster, but there's a reason why Wink Martindale, I think, is going to trust them in the passing game more so than in the run defense game. Even though you have a great pass rusher, I just feel like Aiden Hutchinson is a little bit more upside. It's a reason why I thought he was a better pass rusher coming out of Michigan than Kayvon Thibodeau coming out of Oregon.
Carolina Panthers cornerback J.C. Horn or Seattle Seahawks cornerback Tariq Woolen?
I'm going to say this right now. J.C. Horn's the most slept-on player in the NFC. People forget that he has all the physical traits of what you look for in a boundary cornerback. He has that alpha dog mentality. And because he got hurt as a rookie, people forgot he was on pace to be just as good as Pat Surtain. Surtain's got all the accolades right now because he's had 2 back-to-back all-pro caliber years, Pro Bowl caliber seasons. I think that Tariq Woolen had a great year last year, but it's how do you build going off of year 2? Like, A.J. Terrell was a cornerback for the Atlanta Falcons that was really sluggish in year 1, breakout year in year 2, came back to reality as kind of a middle-tier kind of cornerback in year 3. I don't think you see that with J.C. Horn. I think J.C. Horn continues to improve his stat line every year.
Los Angeles Chargers cornerback Asante Samuel Jr. or Houston Texans cornerback Derek Stingley Jr.?
Derek Stingley Jr. last year was a cornerback that was playing outside of his best type of coverage. He's gained about 15 pounds of muscle. You put him in an AFC South that has no wide receiver play, he's the better option.
You're listening to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
When you talk about college football playoff contenders, you always got to mention the guys who are leading the charge. And it's been a very quiet offseason in those realms of college football fans to talk about the defending national champion, Georgia Bulldogs, and another team that probably could have won a title last year. 800-224-2004. See, The thing that I love to do is I love to get on YouTube and I love to watch other videos. And I love to be able to hear other conversations by those who I trust in the industry. I think that my knowledge of college football is second to none. I really do believe, and this is not me tooting my own horn because of I think that I am the king crop of everything possible on Sports Map Radio. I do, and I'm not going to sit there and deny it. Sorry, folks. I do believe that I am the GOAT. But I love hearing opinions of those that I trust and those who I know are absolutely right. And the thing that I continue to hear is that no one mentions Ohio State. No one mentions Georgia this offseason. It's been a very quiet offseason on the fronts with those two teams when being brought up in conversation. And people are going to say, well, how is that possible? Because if everyone else is talking about, what, Tennessee and what they did last year, Clemson, what direction they're going in, Florida State's breakout season because of what they added in via the transfer portal. Yours truly has done this on his own show. Texas right now going to the SEC. This is the last big year for them to maybe win the Big 12 title for the first time since 2009 when Mac Browns and Colt McCoy was on the sidelines. You have to realize part of the reason why we haven't been able to bring up conversations of Ohio State and really Georgia for that matter, and Georgia's really the one I want to focus on real fast, is because of there's been other things going on in the realm of college football. We're talking right now about the future of the ACC, and I think a lot of people forget about that, with the Magnificent Seven trying to get out of their current contract to where they can either start their own conference, break away from the ACC, and join places like the Big Ten or the SEC. That's a big storyline to follow. So what happens? You push Georgia and its national championship odds to become the first three-peat down the wire a little bit. What happens when you talk about the SEC? Now going to an 8 or 9 game schedule and how that could factor into college football playoff seeding, how that could factor into the future of how many teams make it from the conference. Well, that pushes Georgia's national championship odds down the serve pass a little bit. NIL being a very big deal. Transfer portal being a very big deal. Those are subject matters that I feel like you need to hit on because they're more prominent to the sport right now. So it pushes Georgia down the pedestal a little bit. Part of the reason I don't have to talk about Georgia, you know what Georgia is. Yeah, Georgia is losing a lot of players, and this will be a very big year for Kirby Smart. I'm going to be completely real with you, Georgia fans. I know we have an audience out in the ATL. You still are, in my opinion, the favorites to win the college football playoff. You still are the favorites this year to go ahead and three-peat. And yeah, you're going to have to be able to prove to the world and society you can win without Stetson Bennett, the fourth at quarterback. But when you have a roster and the talent, the amount of surplus talent that comes into your staff every single year via the transfer portal, via the recruiting trail, you don't really worry about things like how do we replace the production of a Stetson Bennett? How do we feel our defense continues to have great stellar consistency without guys like Trayvon Walker or N'Kobe Dean or this year, no Jalen Carter, Keely Ringo in coverage? Because of your Georgia, you're supposed to be out that way. Nobody bats an eye when Alabama loses a coordinator, loses a 5-star wide receiver, loses a talent at quarterback because of, well, you still have Nick Saban in the building. Nick Saban consistently wins, and Nick Saban has built a long resume to where even when there are question marks or concerns or roster changes or personnel changes, you still believe they're going to be running the show. Georgia's just kind of crossed that threshold for that point. And I know that there's going to be Alabama fans out there that say, how dare you go ahead and betray your culture? Well, you know what? I'm going to be a realist here, people. The reality is that Georgia has crossed that threshold. They are a national contending title team every single year, regardless of who's playing quarterback, regardless of who's in their backfield, how many players they lose via the transfer portal or to the NFL draft. And so I don't feel like I need to bring up Georgia as much. I don't think most people in the major spotlight need to mention Georgia as much because plain and simple, you know who you are as a team. The biggest question mark is who's going to be playing quarterback for you. Here's the best part. You have a multitude of options at your disposal. Brock Vandergrift still is there. Carson Beck is still there. There are two quarterbacks right there that both could probably get you to an 11-1 season and then take you to Atlanta. So I don't have to bring you up in conversation. Bear Alexander was one of the biggest names to enter the transfer portal this offseason, and no one seemed to bat an eye in Athens because of look who's standing behind him waiting in the wings and now is salivating at the opportunity to get more starting reps, to get more opportunities to earn their chance of maybe hearing their name called in the first round by Commissioner Roger Goodell in 2024, 2025. And you still run the show with the way that your conference schedule is built. I mean, name a game outside of the Tennessee matchup, because it's played in Neyland Stadium this year, that you feel like there is a trap moment for a team like Georgia. There isn't. That's part of the reason why I don't bring them up in conversation. Alabama, we've only brought them up a handful of times this offseason, and this is a very precedent year for Nick Saban, because this could be the first time since he walked into Tuscaloosa in 2007 where 10 wins is not guaranteed. 10 wins is a staple year for those folks in Tuscaloosa. And everyone out there, when you go 10-2, says it's a down season because of your productivity did not meet the level of impact that you should have had. But you're in that kind of conversation. So when people don't bring up Georgia, it's not because we don't think Georgia is that good of a team or that Georgia is being quote-unquote slept on. No, we know what you are as a roster. Nobody wants to hear about how you're going to win it for the umpteen time. That's what good rosters do. You regroup, you replenish, you don't ever rebuild, you retool, and you find yourself back in the same conversation as you were a year ago. Now let's go ahead and talk about Ohio State for that matter, because Ohio State is being met for vastly asinine expectations going into the year. And by asinine, I mean, what's the criteria for Ryan Day to save his job? There's people out in Columbus, Ohio right now that do believe Ryan Day is the problem. And for that matter, you could say that Ryan Day certainly hasn't been the main source to the team's success, but Ohio State has been to a college football playoff. Ohio State has been to two college football playoffs, for that matter, underneath a guy in Ryan Day. Ohio State has been to a national championship underneath a guy like Ryan Day. And again, I said this yesterday on the show. I look at a team like Wisconsin, I think they are a dark horse to be this year's TCU. Why? Because they have a first-year coach in Luke Fickell, who's already been to the college football playoff, a veteran quarterback in Tanner Mordecai that's played in an air raid style of offense, and they have an offensive coordinator in Phil Longo who's going to come into the building. And if those two get on the right chemistry page, look at that. They create a winning recipe overnight. Ohio State, they're still Ohio State. People forget that Ohio State right now finishes top five in recruiting every single year. People forget right now Ohio State finishes with Fred Biletnikoff Award winners and Jim Thorpe Award winners and excellent Joe Moore Award winners. The offensive line is always relegated and praised for their success. And do I think that this is a year where maybe we could say Ohio State is not going to live up to expectations as of a guaranteed 11-1 team with maybe that one loss coming to Michigan? Maybe. Why am I going to count on Ohio State when I've seen this product work before? Change quarterbacks? Don't change the outcome. Go off Justin Fields? Add in C.J. Stroud. Justin Fields leads you to a national championship. C.J. Stroud leads you to a college football playoff. Lose a guy like Garrett Wilson. Upgrade with a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr. Say goodbye to Chris Olave. Say hello to M.A. Ibuka. That's what they have in Ohio State right now. And again, Ohio State, for that matter, is still a team that I view as one of the forefronts of the Big Ten. Like, you can go ahead and say that Penn State needs to have a breakout year this year, that Wisconsin seems to be a team on the rise, that Michigan right now is looking for a reason to get over the hump, but they still are playing catch-up with Ohio State because that has been the forefront and the leader when it comes to the Big Ten. That's what they are. They're not slowing down either. And the only reason why we're saying, oh, well, they don't deserve to be in the same conversation of national title odds with Michigan is because of what they lost in the likes of the transfer portal and in the NFL draft. No more DeJuan Jones. No more Paris Johnson. C.J. Stroud. Jackson Smith and Jigba. You still have elite wide receiver play. You still have three quarterbacks in the building that all very well could get to 10 wins. An offensive line that has been recruited to top five levels with five-star talent out the wazoo. A defense that's going to have a second year underneath Jim Knowles. And the schedule really feels winnable. You have two trap games very early on before, quote-unquote, the game. You have Notre Dame, and you have Wisconsin. Outside of that, you don't really have a big stretch of matchups until you face off against Penn State and potentially Michigan. And outside of that, I still think that you're probably the favorites in that. So, you look at the team, why can't they be in the running for a national title odd? I have no idea why. Who's making that stuff up? Seriously. The only reason why they weren't playing for a national title and probably being talked about in the same light as a Georgia is because they missed a game-winning field goal that went wide right in Atlanta. That was the difference of them not winning a national title last year and them going home and now having all these speculations that Ryan Day can't win the big game. Ryan Day can't be the reason why Ohio State gets back to glory and ramifications. So please stop when everyone's saying, why aren't you talking about my team that much? It's because we know what your team is, and it's damn good.